Are we all set? Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol on Wednesday, February 10th, for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. I call that commission meeting to order. Well, we'll have a few opening comments here. First of all, we have to acknowledge the black balloons and the black attire on the podium here by Commissioner Chrisman and I, mourning Commissioner Culk's entry into the fifth decade of life. So we thought we should not let you off that easy, even though your birthday was Monday. It just worked out so perfectly that today was a commission meeting and we could razz you a little bit. So I like your little 50-year-old throne, and happy birthday. We'll be having some dirt cake later this afternoon. So staff can join us at 2 o'clock for that. All right. We've got a really full agenda today, but I just wanted to make a couple opening comments, as I'm sure my colleagues will, on the news yesterday that the Supreme Court has stayed the Clean Power Plan. That was really good news, I think, for North Dakota. We had been part of the state's asking for a stay, and I think it really allows everybody to step back and consider what the EPA has proposed, allow that whole legal process to work its way through the courts before all of the companies and utilities that we regulate and others that we don't have to make all their plans as if the rule is legal and the law of the land. And so allow that to work itself out first, and then we can not have to pull the trigger on some of these plans quite as quickly, perhaps. I think it's important to note that the Clean Power Plan is just one plan. It is one option for how to address this issue. It is not the only option. It's just the one that the EPA has chosen to follow. And I think it's important for folks to not assume that just because you oppose this plan that you oppose doing anything at all. And I think that there are lots of different ways that you can approach reducing carbon dioxide emissions. And I think that there's been a lot of work done to that effect in the last 10 years in our country. And we're seeing in North Dakota 15% of our electricity coming from renewable sources and a reduction in our carbon dioxide emissions in North Dakota as well. So I think there's other ways to do this. I think that we will hold strong in fighting efforts that threaten our jurisdiction so much and really take away the decision-making that has been granted to the PSC by our state constitution to help regulate the electricity in our state. So with that, I will allow my colleague, Commissioner Chrisman, to make his opening comments. Turn it over to you.
Well, to just add on to that, you know, I'm really proud of the fact that this commission played a role in North Dakota's case as far as why there should be a stay, including a declaration. And, of course, when something is successful, I suppose just like with the Super Bowl team, every player would like to take some credit. And so it would be fun for us to try and take credit, I suppose. But I think that would be quite over the top. But the fact of the matter is it takes a lot of bricks to build a house, and really every one of them is important if they start falling out. And so I do feel good about that. And you had mentioned that the Clean Power Plan is one plan as far as dealing with carbon. But just because someone would oppose that doesn't mean they would be opposed to any option for dealing with carbon. I think as I listened to the lawyers discuss this case and what it would take in order to get a stay, which is a really high bar, my understanding always was that they needed to persuade a majority of the court that keeping this in place while it is litigated would require that we prove that the rule imposes immediate and irreparable harm and a substantial likelihood that the rule is illegal. And so obviously with a majority of the court, we made that case. And so it is a remarkably high bar that our attorneys crossed over to achieve this, and I think a good sign of things to come. So I'm optimistic on that front.
Thank you, Commissioner Chrisman. Mr. Kolk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll hold my birthday comments till the end. The same topic the two of you were talking about, I think that Randy kind of set it up where, you know, it was just a one-page decision, so I read through it last night, and I was like, what exactly did the court say? The court didn't say much other than just it was stayed. But I think what Commissioner Chrisman points out is that it really sets the stage that hopefully that the courts solidify that states have, you know, primacy jurisdiction on setting rates and reliability concerns and those things. Hopefully it does, that cost has to be a factor when you do these kind of things. So it'll be interesting how it all plays out. But I would say that this commission, I think we've done a very good job, and we're going to keep doing a good job on making sure that as people try to incorporate other types of things besides, you know, coal and nuclear, we look at the cost. We've held the line with Xcel Energy on the restack we're going through right now. Every time a company comes in here and they wants to put something new on the grid, we go through the cost and need, and I think we're going to keep doing that. And so I think our path forward, it almost like it really, I think, hope the companies take heed that the court has stayed this. Because if you flip this around, this maybe get a little bit too hard to explain, but I'll try to take a swing at it. If you spin this around, a few years ago there was the MATS rule that was put into place, and the courts did not stay the MATS rule. So all these companies came in front of the commission and they said, we've got to do this because the MATS rule it hasn't been stayed, it's being litigated, but we've got to do it. And so we bought off on that as a commission, and before long the courts rolled it back, but the investor well, now the court has stayed this. So the investor owns that come in and say, I've got to do this to comply, I need to go back to how we dealt with this before. The court has stayed this. So IOUs, don't be bringing in stuff to comply with the Clean Power Plan because it's been stayed. That's the message I'm putting out there, because we'll see how this plays itself out. But if you look at the way we dealt with the MATS rule, it was a completely inverse situation. At the end of the day, that was rolled back. So, the last thing I'll take a swing at on the whole Clean Power Plan discussion is that I really urge states that have renewable mandates, look at those. Because the renewable mandates, I've always said that they neglect cost. Because they say you have to put X amount of solar, X amount of wind, X amount of this in the grid, regardless of cost. And if a state wants to do that, I think that is their state's right, but don't expect other states to pay for it, which, is, of course, the backdrop of our Xcel discussion. But states should really be looking at this, because if the Supreme Court says you should not be driving renewable mandates, the states should be looking at that, too, because we've got enough challenges around us. So hopefully our colleagues in Minnesota look at this as well, and other states that are looking at renewable mandates. So that's my soapbox on that, Madam Chair. Now back to the 50th birthday party celebration. I would just like to make some notes on that. You'll note that Super Bowl 50 and my birthday of 50 all coincide the same year. So I'm just saying, is I don't
same
think.
Week.
Well, there was some discussion about me doing the Super Bowl halftime show, but I told them I had to be at a hearing in Watford City the next day or so, so I had to turn that down. Now, as you turn 50, I've noticed that the golf tees will be closer to the green, so I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. There are many other benefits of being 50. So, and I would say that I would ask staff to hold all of this paraphernalia, because someone very close to me will be entering this club not too far distant future. So thank you all for that.
Yeah, I was aware of that when I went down this path, but decided to take my chances. I'm up for election this year, so.
Any press is good press, right?
Well, you never know how things turn out, so.
And
all right.
Even Dave Thompson is in on the.
On the black
on
theme.
On the black, so.
Okay. Does that conclude your comments?
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome.
It may have been, but I might have forgot because I'm so old.
Oh. Okay. So we'll move. We have a number of items on consent, and I think that Commissioner Chrisman, did you have any changes to make to this consent agenda?
Yes, I would like to pull numbers RC2 through RC22 out, and those need a little bit more time.
All right.
Or a little more work. They certainly don't need more time.
Okay. Okay, with noting that change, the remaining items on the consent agenda, with the exception of RC2 through RC22, I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just like to add, I appreciate Commissioner Crispin pulling those off because I think it's better good for us to go through those numbers and double check and tie a little discussion about it. So thanks for doing that.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Moving to my agenda, first item, I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings and public hearing in Sakakawea Pipeline Company, LLC, 16-inch crude oil pipeline, McKenzie County, citing application case number PU-15-744.
Second.
Sakakawea Pipeline Company has filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a 13-mile, 16-inch diameter crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in McKenzie County, North Dakota. The staff has gone through that initially, deemed that them complete, and so today in our admin meeting, we want to set a hearing for that pipeline, which runs just east of Johnson Corner, up north, and ends up south of Keene. This is, I believe, if my numbers are correct, the third Sakakawea Pipeline project that we've had in the last probably 12 months. And so this company is really investing and building out some significant infrastructure in the heart of the Bakken. And so we're pleased to go through that and give it a careful review. And we'll set a hearing date in the admin portion of our meeting.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, the second order. I move the commission adopt the order on reissuing certificates and permits in Highland Operating LLC and Highland Partners Holdings Transfer Certificate number 125 and permit number 134, citing application case number PU-15-791, transfer certificate number 116 and permit number 126, case number PU-15-793, and transfer certificate 149 and permit 160, case number PU-15-794.
Second.
So Highland has applied to transfer all the certificates that I identified earlier in the motion. On December 8th, they filed an affidavit of William E. Wolf, Assistant General Counsel for Kinder Morgan, on behalf of Highland Partners in each case. Basically, that affidavit states that Highland Partners agrees to assume the rights and obligations of all of the certificates of corridor compatibility and the route permits that are listed in the motion. So I think that this is pretty straightforward. The staff has reviewed it and recommends it approval.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the supplemental findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in the North Dakota Pipeline Company, LLC, 24-inch oil pipeline sandpaper project, citing application case number PU-13-848.
Second.
This is a reroute for the sandpiper line, and we followed the reprint kind of laws that were established by the legislature two sessions ago in processing this. But just to restate a little bit of the case history, we originally approved the order on and a permit on June 25th of 2014 for this sandpiper pipeline. On November 10th of 2015, and North Dakota Pipeline Company, LLC, filed applications to amend the designated corridor and route at two locations, one in Towner County and one in Nelson County. So we sent out a notice of opportunity for a hearing on December 2nd, and that notice expired on January 7th, and we did not receive any comments or requests for hearings. Meanwhile, the staff and the company have done all the necessary studies and examination of these reroutes. The two reroutes were actually developed to avoid U.S. Fish and Wildlife wetland easements and a wetland reserve program easements by the NRCS. If you look at the actual maps that they provided in their application, you can see clearly that the original route went kind of right through a whole series of wetlands, and the reroute goes nicely around them, and in both cases. So this is a case where the company gets closer in and starts doing more serious examination of the routes and comes up with ways to improve the actual route of the pipeline and minimizing further the impacts of it. The length of the route adjustment in Towner County will be a little over 10,000 feet, and the length of the route adjustment in Nelson County will be a little over 18,000 feet. Most importantly, there's no exclusion areas in the survey area. There's one avoidance area, which is a rural resident within 500 feet, and they have received the a waiver from that resident, and all the landowners on the reroute have signed their easements. So with that in mind, and knowing that they've completed all of the appropriate surveys and studies, I think that this is a good change, and I'm happy to support it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
On my fourth motion, I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings and public hearing in Senex Pipeline LLC Senex Prosper Terminal Project, Cass County Siting Application Case Number PU-15-798.
Second.
Senex Pipeline has filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit concerning a refined pipeline product storage and distribution facility to be constructed on approximately 63 acres near Prosper, North Dakota. During the admin portion of the meeting, we will set the date, time, and location for that hearing. But this is just for a couple of storage tanks that I believe are associated with the New Star Pipeline project that we had a hearing for 2 weeks ago in Fargo.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. My fifth motion, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Sakakawea Pipeline Company, LLC, 12-inch crude oil pipeline, Montreal County siting application, case number PU-15-670.
Second.
My colleague, just a note to my colleagues, you received kind of a late change to this addition, to this motion and to this order, but I want to assure you there weren't any substantive changes in the order. At the last minute, it was all just kind of small changes and typos and spacing issues just to make the order look better. So there wasn't anything substantive in terms of changes at the last minute. So just to walk through this a little bit, on September 14th of 2015, Sakakawea Pipeline filed applications for a corridor and route concerning approximately 8 miles of 12-inch diameter pipeline in Montreal County, North Dakota. On October 14th, staff deemed this application complete, and we set a date of January 12th for the hearing in Stanley, North Dakota, and we held that hearing as scheduled on January 12th in Stanley. Sakakawea is a joint business venture between Paradigm Energy, Phillips 66, and Gray Wolf Midstream. This project was their second that we examined last year, and we just earlier set for scheduling another third project, a pipeline project. Sakakawea testified that the project will be constructed by Paradigm, owned by Sakakawea, and operated by Phillips 66. So the project will consist of 8 miles of 12-inch diameter pipeline, and facilities in Montreal County will be known as the Palermo to Enbridge crude oil pipeline. The project will be constructed for the bidirectional transmission of crude oil between the Phillips 66 Palermo rail facility and the Enbridge crude oil terminal near Stanley. And the estimated cost of the project is $18 million, And the maximum capacity of the pipeline will be 100,000 barrels per day. In through their application and hearing process, the company consulted 13 local, state, and federal agencies, and all of their feedback is incorporated into this order. In last August, the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office concurred with a no significant sites affected determination for the project. The project, in terms of exclusion and avoidance areas, the project crosses a designated critical habitat area for the piping plover, but the project will not impact that because they're going to be boring through that area. There's no other exclusion areas in that in the survey area, and there are no avoidance areas in the survey area. In terms of measures to minimize impact, they've incorporated a large number of them, they'll have a SCADA system, a 24/7 control center monitoring the pipeline with remote capabilities for shutting it down. They will be constructing the pipeline according to 49 Code of Federal Regulations, Part 195. They are following U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. and U.S. ACE requirements to bore to avoid impacts on wetlands that are jurisdictional to those agencies. And they've contracted with Clean Harbors to provide emergency spill response services. They have obtained all the easements for the pipeline. And so, in general, or in summary, this is a hearing. We had a careful evaluation of all the key criteria on this pipeline, the construction, operation, all the safety features, the maintenance, its integrity management program, and their emergency response. And it was interesting, in this hearing, the first time I noted that the company actually said that they incentivize their staff to proactively shut down pipelines if they have any reason to suspect any kind of a problem with the pipeline. So they don't just encourage them, they incentivize them. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, the first time I'd actually heard that from one of the companies. But this pipeline's purpose is to transport oil between that Palomar Rail facility and the Enbridge crude oil terminal. It is bidirectional, allowing them to transfer it for it both ways, so it really helps, again, increase the efficiency of this type of infrastructure and provide a pipeline option for transporting this crude, which currently is probably between those two areas, transported by trucks. So it further builds out this critical pipeline infrastructure needed to serve the long-term needs of this industry in western North Dakota. And I think after hearing from the company and thoroughly going through this application, I'm confident that they have a good plan in place to operate this effectively for many years to come and to respond to any potential problems that occur along the way. And I'm pleased to support this order today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I maybe just like to add you can see by the number of motions that Chairman Fedorchak said. I mean, it's not slowing down much out there for what we're doing for hearings. We just spent all day yesterday in two different hearings. And I guess what I'm sensing out there and seeing is that I go back to my Marine background when I was a logistics guy. The hearings that we were working on before pipelines were these brute force logistics kind of pipelines, moving stuff from A to B. We're starting to see a lot of these projects now that are a little smaller. It seems like they're better thought out ways to really improve the efficiency of what they're doing, moving oil around to smaller footprints. So this project that you just talked about is doing exactly that. They clearly put a lot of thought into what will help them in that area. So I really liked seeing these kind of projects, and I don't see a slowdown out there. I see a lot more deliberate thinking as they develop the infrastructure, and they're positioning themselves for when the price of oil rebounds, they'll have a nice nucleus area that they can then build out on. So I like what's going on out there.
Is there any further discussion? And see none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. JF6, I move the commission adopt the order amending certificate and permit in One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC Spring Creek Pump Station Project, McKenzie County, citing application case number PU-15-725.
Second.
This is another reprint application. Again, a streamlined process to help companies move forward as fast as possible after the appropriate review on any modifications to their original permits that they need once they get into the construction process. This is for the One Oak Garden Creek LNG pipeline. NGL pipeline, sorry, that was permitted originally on in September of 2011. They filed application in November of 2015 to amend the original corridor and route permit. They are proposing to construct a pump station to be known as the Spring Creek Pump Station that will extend outside of the designated corridor slightly and will be located in McKenzie County. We did issue a notice of opportunity for hearing on this, and we did not receive any comments or requests for hearing, and that time period expired on February 4th. The project site is approximately 1.8 acres. The portion of the project which extends outside the originally designated corridor is an area approximately 135 feet by 275 feet. This project will add an additional 25,000 barrels per day of capacity to the Garden Creek to Riverview NGL pipeline, and the total anticipated cost is $8 million. Again, this company conducted all of the appropriate studies. They consulted with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Game and Fish, and the North Dakota Historic Preservation Office. That office, the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office, concurred with the no significant sites determination. There are no exclusion areas or avoidance areas present in the survey area. So after review, I think that this is another positive change that adds, without a lot of material impact, a considerable amount of additional capacity to that pipeline. And I think it's a good project, and I look forward to supporting it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
One thing I would just add, and it just occurs to me because of the size of the acreage that's outside of their existing area, you know, it's pretty similar to what a lot of the larger modern housing sites are in cities these days. And when I noticed that in the orator, I was thinking about the fact that these pipelines pay property taxes, and a lot of people don't realize that because except for these pump stations and such, they're kind of out of sight, out of mind, and most of the local property owners don't probably realize that the pipelines are also helping to pay the property taxes in that county and school district and such. And I think if this were an $8 million home going up out there, people would take notice of the fact that this is going to make a difference in everyone's property taxes. Everyone else has to pay a little less because you've got this new $8 million home going up. Even what seems like small projects compared to some of the large projects that we work on come in, they do have significant impacts out there.
So by supporting this order today, you're providing property tax relief.
Property tax relief.
I think we should calculate how much money in property tax relief we've helped support over the years.
It would be a lot.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and the final item on my agenda today is a report on the Consumer Affairs Division. This is a division in the PSC that we created in, let's see, what year was that, Stacy? 2014, a portfolio, not a division, a portfolio.
Reinstated,
yes, with Commissioner Cox's encouragement. And I'm the chair of this, or the head of this portfolio. I work a lot with Stacy Eberl, our consumer affairs person. And the whole goal of this effort is to make sure that we're being very transparent about what we do here, that we're accessible to the public, and that we're responsive to the public and their questions and complaints and needs. We have significantly increased some of our public outreach efforts in the last couple of years. In two ways, really. We've increased public notification of hearings by providing at least two news releases for every hearing when it's scheduled, and then again closer to the date. I'm noticing when we go to places, people know about these the hearings more often, even if they don't take time to come because they don't have an interest. Yesterday we were in Wofford City, and we ran into a local legislator who knew we were there and had noticed that we were coming. So we've taken steps to on a regular basis, announce the hearings and make every effort to make sure the public knows that we're having them and they're welcome to attend. We've also improved the legal notices. I personally am one who doesn't like legal notices. I think that they're cumbersome, they're impossible to read, they're too small a print, and I don't think the average citizen looks to the legal notices to find out what they care about. So we've tried to, we're required by law to use them, and it is a significant expense that the companies bear to help notify the public about these hearings and the work that we're having. And so we worked with the North Dakota Newspaper Association to improve our legal notices. If any of you have taken time to read them, you may see that they are more of a display ad now, and they're written. We make every effort to write them in common language, not legalese, in another attempt to really explain to people in a simple terms what we're doing, when we're doing it, where we're doing it, and why they might be interested. And so those are two efforts. We'll be happy to consider others as people as we come up with the ideas and as we see a need, ways to reach out to the public to improve the coordination between our agency and the public. If you look at the report, we basically have been keeping track of how many contacts we've received the last couple of years, and the contacts are just about the same or up slightly. If you take out the last year, we've received 905 public consumer contacts compared to 639 of this year. Last year, something that threw them off a little bit was 369 contacts related to an online petition regarding rail safety that was relating to the conditioning standards that ultimately the PSC really didn't have any authority over, but we did receive those and we did count them. And so there was 369 of those, which beefed up our numbers quite a bit. So the contacts are about the same, up slightly if you take out that petition. We have increased participation awareness in our hearings, as I said. The utility complaints are down slightly, with the exception of CenturyLink, which is up a fair amount over last year, and we're dealing with some service issues with CenturyLink that they've kind of make some progress and then kind of slip back a little bit. So it's an ongoing relationship that we're working on with CenturyLink and some of the customers that they serve. So that's a summary of what's happening at the PSC in terms of consumer contacts. And I want to thank Stacy and other staff for really taking working with the public seriously and being very responsive to the public who we serve and making sure that we're doing our best to work with them and on their issues as it relates to our jurisdiction. So
we don't have to move anything. We're just talking about
right.
it.
Right.
Yep. I would just like to thank you and Stacy for your work on this, and I think that it's exactly what we wanted to do. You guys have done. We've got data we're collecting from year to year, so we can see trend lines up and down. And to me, that was the big thing. By doing this every year, we could compare you back and forth. Mm-hmm. What might be quote unquote normal, and if we see different spikes, then relate it back to something. So no, thank you guys. And I will say that, and Randy's got a really good story about this. Our staff, I think, does a tremendous job. They're not only do they do the kind of customer complaint servicing on this kind of stuff. When somebody calls here, even if it's not our jurisdiction, they'll help them out. They'll try to walk them through. We had someone walk in the office today looking for a DOT meeting, and he had PSC and DOT confused. And so Amy walked him through where he needed to go to, where he needed to be. So our staff does a great job, and they'll help people when they call, even if it is in our jurisdiction. They really try to help them out.
Yeah, and we get a fair number of those calls. Those are kind of calculated in the quick referrals. Where is somebody's calling us? We had 253 of those this year, where somebody calls looking for something that we don't control, but we send them try to point them in the right direction as much as possible. Public Service Commission doesn't necessarily clearly state what we do, and in some people's mind, we, you know, public service. Well, yeah, I need some public service. I'm calling them.
It's true.
So.
Been said before, but service is our middle name, and we're proud of the staff because that's what they do. And I've numerous times found our staff helping out people from around the state who call in with something that's non-jurisdictional to us. But I think our staff generally knows that if they know the answer and can help out, we just do it and move on and provide that service. I did have a question for you on the rail complaints from in the past and the fact that they're down substantially. You had mentioned the conditioning, but would it also be part of the fact that we had so many previously because of that the problem that we had with getting grain shipped that previous year. There was the real wet year at the end of 2013, and so stuff was stored until it was dry, and then the tracks were wet, and they were trying to build up, and so there, I think also a lot of grain ones.
Right, there was a lot of service issues in 2014, and that was the big year where there was the log jam on the rail system, and so we got a lot of service complaints that year. And this year on the rail side, we are seeing pretty steady complaints and contacts to the office seeking our assistance, most of them related to block crossings, various issues with fencing or other things, that the siren, the horns going off and that sort of thing. So we do get a fair number of those kind of complaints on a regular basis. But the service complaints, I think we only had one this past year, so it's a really astounding change. So basically, we're keeping service in the Public Service Commission. All right. Thanks very much. That concludes my items in my portfolio, so I'll pass it over to you, Commissioner Christman.
I only have two items this meeting, but they're both really important. I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Mid-Continent Communications designated eligible carrier application, case number PU-16-48.
Second.
Mid-Continent filed an application to expand its ETC service area by adding 32 exchanges within the state. Mid-Continent proposes to provide the supported services established by the FCC in the expanded area, comparable to the services being offered by the incumbent local exchange carrier. Subscribers would be able to access additional advanced services at competitive prices. The issues to be considered in this matter are, is the applicant qualified for designation as an ETC eligible to receive federal universal service funding in the additional exchange areas? That's the first one. The second one is, what additional ETC universal service support area should be designated? And the third question to be considered is the designation of the additional area to the applicant in the public interest? So those who are interested are invited to comment on the application in writing, or persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reason for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by March 25th. If deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine this matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
It'll be very interesting to see how this one plays out, who may or may not want a hearing and how this all affects it, because Mid-Continent's working hard to keep growing their services, and our telcos have done a great job, but this is a competition at its finest, perhaps.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I would just add that these 32 exchanges are in the areas of about 7 or 8 different incumbent local exchange carriers, a large group out here in the southwest corner of the state, and then and the rest of them kind of mostly being in the northeast and north central part of the state, various carriers up there.
Just a question, and we can flesh this out more during the review process, but does this allow them, Mid-Continent, to then provide cable services through that network as well if they go into these exchanges?
Our action doesn't have to do with their cable exchanges. I expect that in most of these places they already are a cable provider there, and they're requesting universal service funding
to help
support so they can provide telephone service and
through their same cable network.
I presume so, or potentially upgrade. I'm sure some of them are probably in need of upgrades, and this would increase the likelihood. Looking at Pat to see if I explained anything incorrectly. But
is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Okay, in RC2, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-58, canceling warehouse license number 204, issued to Golva Cooperative Elevator Company at Golva, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Golva is discontinued.
Second.
We received a request to discontinue business from the Golva Cooperative Elevator Company. This warehouse was empty, and they have no unpaid scale tickets and no outstanding warehouse receipt obligations. The grain warehouse facilities were dismantled, and the agronomy and bulk feed business was sold to CHS's Circle Montana branch. Staff recommends that the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
As always, when this came out on the agenda, I started receiving inquiries of where did Golva get its name and, and where is it at? And
as always.
Did we log those as consumer contacts?
Staff concerns, primary staff that were concerned. And so for those who aren't familiar, and I have to admit it's been a few years since I was to Golva, but as I recall, it's about 15 or 20 miles south of Beach, so it's just like 2 or 3 miles in from the Montana line, and down there about, well, less than a half hour for sure from Beach. And the name Golva was acquired because when they pioneered it over 100 years ago, it was the intention by at least some that that be the county seat of Golden Valley County, so they took the first three letters of Golden and the first two letters of Valley and came up with Golva.
Nice.
Creative.
Is there any
those
further
old
discussion?
Pioneers, they had good ideas.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my agenda, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Kalk.
Yes, ma'am. I hope I don't get too distracted by the 50-year-old balloons over here. I did forget the one comment I was going to make yesterday when we were bantering back and forth about my 50th birthday and the 50th Super Bowl all being the same year. I made the comment to my colleagues that, you know, hopefully in life that I'm 50 years old, I'm at the halftime of life, not in the third quarter. And Commissioner Fedorchak said, well, I was a hockey player, and she thought it was more appropriate that, to use the hockey analogy, she thought I was well into the third period of life. So we'll see how it all plays out, Madam Chair. Item BK1. I move the commission deem the amendment to applications complete and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Basin Electric Power Company's 345 KV transmission line, Mercer Dunn McKenzie Williams, citing application case number PU11-696.
Second.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In April of 2015, the commission approved corridor certificate and route permit for Basin Electric to construct 197 miles of 345 KV and 230 KV line. I'm certain we all remember those hearings. And just like our similar discussion today about the Sandpiper line having some tweaks, in January of this year, Basin filed an amendment requesting three minor corridor and route modifications in Williams County. All three of them were for landowner requests. There's a map that's attached, but basically Route 1 is in Williams County, approximately 5 miles west-northwest of Williston. The landowner requests to move the route approximately 5 miles to the west, if you will. Modification 2 is 6 miles north-northwest of Williston. Same kind of thing. Landowner requests to move it a little bit, 4.5-mile shift, all within their property. And finally, route modification number 3, 8 miles west of Epping, to also request the landowner to accommodate landowner request to move it basically down a section line. So it's as we get into the final refinements of these projects, it's really good that Basin stays in tune with the landowners. When landowners request something, then the company is able to do that. I think it's very appropriate. So we'll see how this plays out. But anyone requesting a hearing must do so by March 14th. Otherwise, the commission can do this in an informal, if required, or just do it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission find the formal complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff on January 13th of this year states a prima facie case and serve the complaint on the respondent and Public Service Commission Rock Solid Excavating Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement case number GS14633.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. I'll walk through this a little bit. The Rock Solid Excavating is a company basically that operates in Williston, North Dakota. They're filed through the North Dakota Secretary of State. WBI filed the complaint. They're a North Dakota company that's actually registered out of Delaware, but for all practical purposes, they do a lot of work in North Dakota. The
this is dated a little bit. In January or July of 2014, the commission received a one-call complaint from WBI alleging that Rock Solid of North Dakota had violated North Dakota Century Code on the one-call excavation notice system. Basically, it alleged that Rock Solid began an excavation while performing a waterline install in Whitetail Circle in Williston, and as a result of the excavation, a backhoe of theirs damaged a 12-inch natural gas line belonging to WBI with approximately $5,500 worth of damage. So what's interesting is, of course, the complaint was filed to our staff. Our staff contacted Rock Solid. Rock Solid sent in correspondence basically taking full responsibility for the incident, and this was back in 2014. So one of the things today basically just states a prima facie case that now the advocacy staff will form the case, and then it'll come back in front of us, and then we'll determine what needs to be done here. But what is very interesting in this is that you know, I just followed through with working with our folks as to, you know, what's the time delay here? What exactly happened? And really, the company, Rock Solid, took full responsibility in a letter that's part of this complaint. And then when our staff basically offered up a consent order, which that's their right to do, Rock Solid rejected it, even though their letter basically says they're responsible for it. So it's very interesting, but that explains the delay. And our staff finally, I think, just says enough's enough, so they're filing a formal complaint. It certainly states a prima facie, because that's all we have to do is determine there's a basis for it, which there certainly is. A little bit about the incident. Luckily, the incident was, there was not a full-blown blowout, if you will, of the line. WBI was able to get out there, put a sleeve on it, fix it quickly. Nobody was injured. But this is very curious, so I just wanted to explain why there's a time delay. Staff's recommending we impose a civil penalty of up to $25,000, but at least $3,500. So this is one of the things that staff is giving us a little more leeway in their recommendation. We can always do what we want, but usually the staff recommends a minimum fine, and then that's it. This time staff has changed a little bit, which is, I think, very appropriate. So this will, if approved today, which I hope we do, then this will be formally filed with Rock Solid, and they'll have a certain period of time to respond, and then we'll set this for hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
So just so I understand, so because they didn't reply to the consent agreement, we have to go to a hearing, even though in their letter they clearly state that they'll pay any fine, whatever, but they haven't, and so that's why we're going to a hearing, right?
Staff is recommending that we do that, and so what I think will happen today is this is a prima facie case, so they will be officially served by the North Dakota Public Service Commission as opposed to a staff inquiry. So I think what this may do, and who knows what they'll do, but I think what we've seen in the past is the commission takes action like this, determining a case, the company sees it, and they're like, oh, these guys are serious about it. And then they'll be, perhaps they may go back to a consent order, perhaps they may request a hearing, but this really, I think, raises the bar of the commission action back to them. This is no longer just our advocacy staff talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
This is now will become an official action from the North Dakota Public Service Commission.
And can you walk through the time frame on this? Because obviously we don't want this to get stuck another month or two or whatever. Like, how can we wrap this thing up quickly?
Well, I think what today does is just state a prima facie case so they'll be served. And then within, I guess there's no set date, but usually within a couple of weeks, as we've talked to our staff before, if they don't respond back, then Victor will come in and they'll set this for hearing.
Okay.
So, yes, now that it's reached this point, I think in our discussion we've had with staff before is we don't want these things to linger on. So the staff looked back through and they had trying to work out a consent order or something, but then the company quit talking to them, so they moved it to us for action.
So I think this is fine, and I'm going to support this. I would like, because we've brought this up a few times with staff, and I think you've talked with them as well, but I would like to see some sort of formal proposal for how many dates we're going to wait when we send them a consent agreement, and that should be included in the consent agreement. You have this many days to reply. And then what is the process so that we can start just having regular consideration of these issues and kind of take care of some of the backlog. But we've talked about it. I know staff has talked a little bit about it, but maybe if we need a work session or on a future discussion, they can come back and say, here's what we're proposing we do for these various timeframes and avoid kind of the problem that happened on this case, where we're almost 2 years after the case, after the event happened.
Well, and the consent order is offered somewhere in the middle. But to your point, what we can do is, I've met with staff, and we've got a matrix based on the discussion the three of us had before. We can just present that to the two of you, and
great.
Go there. But there, it's a guideline like anything mm-hmm. else. But we certainly have that. We could share it with everyone.
And this is one of those issues that comes up occasionally when we're out and about and talking to grumpy folks whose infrastructure has been impacted.
Absolutely.
AE people in Minot. when are you going to start getting the deadlines done? So
well, and it's also, too, I think our staff does a great job, but there's also that just the company takes responsibility for it, and you have to have companies that are accountable for things.
Right.
This is a bizarre scenario, but to your point, yes, absolutely.
Well, and I think staff has been trying to work with the folks to get them to sign the consent agreement, which is I think, our number one, the first avenue, because the cases are expensive, the formal cases. So I appreciate that. I think just now it's good that we move into a more formal process.
We can add that to scheduling if you want for today, because that's easy for our guys to do.
Sure. All right. Thanks, Brian.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Item BK3. I move the commission approve, with revisions, filed January 19, 2016, Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resource Group, Inc., Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2015 Rates, case number PU15-747.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Try to take a couple of minutes and walk through this. If you remember back in December of 2015, I deemed that 2016 to be the year of the power line for the PSC. And it was a little bit in jest back then, but it was also a lot in seriousness, because I knew these kind of costs were coming our way and these challenges for these RTO, MISOs and SPPs of the world, how their transmission costs are really going to continue to increase for what is fed to their IOUs, which then ultimately comes back in front of us. And so what today does is today's order approves MDU's transmission rider for 2015, sets the stage for 2016. And the rate impact, if you will, for the average customer is going to be $1.82 per month, and the average customer based on 894 kilowatts. Roughly this is $6.8 million of transmission costs. And it's a significant amount of money. I mean, we do rate cases that end up being smaller amounts than that. And I do believe transmission riders are the way to deal with these costs, because every year you want a true-up. What I like to do is just break down in three big buckets where these costs come from. Roughly the $6.8 million increase to cover transmission costs, $2.9, almost $3 million of that is MISO expenses. It's costs that MDU will pay to get MISO services, as well as those MVP projects, multi-value projects that MDU has access to, the CapEx lines, the Big Stone to Ellendale line, lines throughout the whole MISO Region 1 that are reliability lines, basically, that our IOUs play a share for. So of that cost, it's, the $2.996 million is a cost to belong to MISO. Now, when we did the cost analysis, and we continue to do it, we believe it's less for the company to belong to MISO than to try to build out these own costs. But the point I'm getting at is these costs of the $2.9 million from MISO, those are basically, I'll call it a force-fed cost. That's a cost of belonging to MISO that by the time it gets to us in this stage, it's a very challenging scenario, because we're not going to be able to do much to affect that cost. That's why our involvement in MISO, OMS, the Organization of MISO States, where Jerry and I spend a lot of time at, particularly Jerry does, and I continue to spend as much time as we can on it, we need to make sure we keep a close eye on those costs and cost allocation as they get laid out, as well as our investor owns do, because these MISO costs have continued to grow over the years, and I'm worried about where they end up at. And so we've got to absolutely remain in those bodies. We also have Southwest Power Pool that we're now involved in, where Victor is involved in as our staff lead. I'm involved in that. And we requested an FTE last legislative session to have someone to do that, as well as some of the other things. So it's absolutely critical that we stay involved in this, as well as our investor-owned. So that's where, roughly half of this cost come from. The other portion of the cost roughly $3.2 million, is for transmission build-out, the Kenmare to Lignite 115 line, Little Muddy line around the Williston area. So the transmission costs, those are ones that we're aware of. I shouldn't say aware of, that we have been tracking a little more closely, where the company comes in and gives us updates on what they're building. It's things that we can reach and touch and control costs on. And the that really lays it out. So the costs become, in the next billing cycle, they'll see those. This is for the cost of 2015, 2016 projections. And it is I won't say significant, but it's an amount that, you know, $1.82 a month, that is something that we really try to keep an eye on. So I believe everything is in order in this, but I wanted to reinforce that we need to keep an eye on what MDU is doing all the time. And then I know they're heavily involved with MISO too, but we really have to stay involved with these regional transmission organizations as they develop their costs, because the transmission build-out, that will level out at some point in time, where we'll meet the needs of the generation, we'll replace what we need. But these ongoing MISO charges, we get to some leveling off, I think that would be good. But I'm concerned that as MISO continues to expand its footprint, more of these costs may get allocated to us, that we've got to take those involvements early. So by the time it gets to this, it's really hard to refute these costs.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Thanks, Commissioner Culk, for that good explanation. And I share your belief that we need to stay involved in those organizations. And I appreciate you and Victor and Jerry really digging in and getting to know and work with those groups on behalf of the customers here, because the costs are extensive. I just wanted to mention a couple things about these kinds of investments and our involvement in those transmission groups. But really, there's a lot of investments being made in North Dakota and throughout the country in the transmission infrastructure. And they're being made to refresh that infrastructure, to strengthen it, but also to incorporate renewables into the grid. And really, I mentioned earlier that utilities are taking steps to reduce their CO2 emissions, and some of that has been through purchasing new and developing new wind and solar resources, and that takes transmission infrastructure to connect those to the grid, and those infrastructure, that resource, is paid for by customers, and here's how we track that, and this is how those costs get allocated to customers. So customers are already supporting that effort and contributing to it through increased rates. And here's an example where we see that, there are efforts being made to reduce the CO2 emissions through the incorporation of renewables, and they're being paid for already by customers and making a difference in the emission levels in North Dakota and other areas.
The great point, Commissioner. I just maybe want to dovetail on that a little bit, and that's one of the challenges of, as the Clean Power Plan was stayed, it has been stayed. So these continued transmission build-outs to incorporate future renewables that may not be needed to meet some mandate, those transmission projects, I think we need to look at all those again. Mm-hmm. So that's where these costs going forward, if Minnesota needs new transmission to hook up something they might need, well, then they should be paying those transmission costs to meet their renewable mandate, not us. And it's not just for MISO. It's not just Minnesota. There's 14 states involved in MISO, all the way from Minnesota to Louisiana. So it's a lot of states involved, and we really have to be involved in all this in the front end.
And that will be the dilemma that any of the regional transmission organizations face. But in the case that we've been discussing with this case, MISO, are they going to be more likely to accommodate states like Minnesota and their renewable portfolio standards that they're pushing, and then just pass the costs around? Or are they going to want to stand up to those cases, those states? And time will tell what the answer is, but I have my suspicions that I know what it's going to be, and that's not going to be something we like very well here.
Well, and I think the reality of the voting world inside of OMS, it used to be when Commissioner Wefald was the first chair of OMS, there was 7 states in OMS, organizational MISO states, and we had 1 vote of 7. Well, soon it will be 1 vote of 14. And so I think we'll find ourselves a lot of times that we'll make our case for North Dakota ratepayers. If we end up not being in the majority, then we will go back in front of FERC to request it because we don't like what MISO is doing, which sets up BK4 perfectly. But I think that's the path forward, as we make our case as best we can inside of MISO and SPP. But if we don't feel North Dakota customers are taken care of, we'll find ourselves in front of the FERC a lot more.
Mm-hmm. And then OMS is just one voice within MISO as well.
Correct. Absolutely. Great point. It's not like they're the supreme voice. Yes.
Yeah. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Daryl. And finally, item BK4. I move the commission acknowledge joining with Minnesota Public Utilities Commission and South Dakota Public Utilities Commission in filing with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission on January 28, 2016, the request for clarification and rehearing of the Joint State Commissions and Public Service Commission FERC docket number ER16-209 SPP PSC comments / intervention case number PU15-740.
Second.
Thank you. Okay, let me see if I can walk through this in an orderly fashion. Basically, recently Southwest Power Pool became a North Dakota operating. Let me back this up. Basin Electric made the decision to join Southwest Power Pool, a regional transmission organization, to help them meet the future needs of their company, to perhaps give them markets to sell their energy into. So Basin joined that system as well as Central Power and the Minot area, and I believe McKenzie out west joined it. So there's some of the companies that we don't particularly regulate. We don't regulate them for their rates. They've joined Southwest Power Pool. And as a result of that, there's been a couple things that have happened with our investor owns. The first being MDU's territory shares a lot of commonality with Basin Electric and Central Power. And so the rates that now get charged to MDU, MDU has been able to work through those with Southwest Power Pool because the provisions of Southwest Power Pool taking some of MDU's services kind of offset what MDU might need from them. So we've got a similar case in front of FERC that a settlement agreement was reached between SPP and MDU that we've weighed in saying we agree with that. And so for MDU, this seems like it has kind of worked itself out. As long as FERC approves it, I think we're okay. Now, this is not the case for Otter Tail. What we're asking for today is the rehearing of the FERC decision involving Otter Tail. And basically, Otter Tail and Central Power, the transmission provider in the Minot area, are really intertwined up in that north-central part of our state. And the FERC basically has made a decision that right now, I shouldn't say the FERC has made a decision, the FERC staff and part of the settlement process has made a decision that right now that Otter Tail continue to have to pay a pancake rate where they have to pay to use some of the SPP facilities that they now access, which belong to Central Power, and they also have to pay MISO charges. So they're getting double rates inside the areas that for many years they were just able to work that back out with Central Power. And this is mostly due that the facility credits that MDU was able to receive because of the larger system, Otter Tail is not able to receive those because some of their facilities don't qualify. And the potential annual cost increase to Otter Tail's customers is $2.96 million a year. So I was just talking in a previous case about that. So this is a big dollar amount. And what we've asked for here, it's not just North Dakota. It's North Dakota, Minnesota, and South Dakota have asked for the FERC to clarify and perhaps rehearing on how they're doing those costs. And when I say clarify, it's basically the commission's all weighed in basically saying we didn't think that Otter Tail should have to have these costs increase just because these companies join Southwest Power Pool. And so we're asking for the FERC to hold harmless Otter Tail and their customers. And basically, either they can do that by clarifying this order or they can basically have a rehearing, which then will weigh into it. So perhaps answer any more questions they want. But the long and short of it is that the three states have intervened with FERC to request that the $2.96 million currently being accrued to Otter Tail, it's happening right now, that those costs not be included and they be allocated to someone besides Otter Tail, because Otter Tail should not have to pay, should not be harmed because these other companies joined SPP. And one of the challenges in it is the build-out of transmission in that part of the state. Central Power billed a little bit, Otter Tail billed a little bit. They were able to share it back and forth, and it worked out great for decades. Well, now with Central Power and Basin joining SPP, the SPP tariff does not allow for Otter Tail's credits, so that's where the roughly $3 million of costs come from. So certainly appropriate that we weigh in with the FERC. Hopefully we can make our argument and those costs are
not headed our way. But if we go out and make our case, the FERC will make a decision, and they could potentially come back our way in a transmission rider down the road. So that's why we're following through in the front end of this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Darrell. Madam Chair, that concludes my comments on my portfolio.
All right, that concludes the items on the regular agenda. I'll just make a couple short announcements, and then we'll break for a few minutes to sign papers. But tomorrow we have a hearing in Watford City that is being handled by an ALJ on our behalf on another small short pipeline in that area. We have, let's see here, a work session on the 18th of February that is noticed as an NSB negotiated agreement. I think that might be wrong. I thought that was a Mankato energy issue, wasn't it? Can we double check that? Because I thought that we set another discussion on the Mankato energy issue for later in February, and well, I know we set one, but I just don't see it. So, where Jerry was going to report back with some proposed orders. So, I think that was what we set for February 18th. So, if we could just check that, staff, that would be great. And then in February 22nd, we have a hearing out in Kildare for another One Oak pipeline. The 24th, we've got the Emergency Commission meeting to talk about the additional fees needed for the Dakota Access Pipeline construction, third-party construction inspection projects. And then March 2nd, we head out to Dickinson for the Brady Wind, both the transmission and the wind production facilities. So another couple busy weeks. Does anyone want to make any closing comments?
I'll be at NARUC next week representing the commission.
Okay. Thank you very much, Randy.
No closing comments.
Okay. Then we'll open up for questions, if you have any.
I do. Do you know offhand, you know, going back to BK1, how many reroutes there have been on that power line? And have they talked about any added costs for the reroutes?
You know, I don't have that off the top of my head. I'll look at Jerry here. I can think of at least a half dozen. But we can get those together for you, Dave.
Yeah.
What would you like, Dave, get the exact number of...
I'm just kind of curious. You know,
I know we've had at least six different reroutes in front of us. Now, in this particular filing... Yeah, it's probably more than that. But we can put those together for you.
And also, has it delayed the completion date?
From what I picked up from the companies, I don't know that it's delayed anything. They just seem to be continuing their build-out and adjust of it.
The first part is already energized.
Yes, they have two segments.
Yep.
This is the second segment.
And the first, when was the first segment energized, Jerry? End of, I was thinking end of 2015. Yeah. So this is from Williston, Tioga. The segment where these reroutes are located is between Williston and Tioga.
Right, going north of town. We'll get those together, Dave. Those are something that would be good to have in
here. Anything else?
So if you go to these meetings, will they serve you miso soup?
Yes, they do a lot of something out there.
I know it is.
I always wanted to call it miso when I first started.
Yeah.
I was laughed at. Nick, did you have a question? I thought I saw your hand.
Oh, I was just kind of...
Yeah.
Brushing off David's silly pun. Mm-hmm. Alyssa, no? Nothing?
No.
Mike? All right. Well, thank you very much. We will take 15 minutes to sign and reconvene at, let's say, 25 after. I have to talk with staff about one thing on the discussion item as well, so I need a little extra time. Thank you.